Here is a question I come back to a lot. If the medical system was designed to keep us well, and genuinely well, not just alive, not just managed, why are there so many people who are exhausted, inflamed, and dismissed? Why are chronic conditions rising in a system that has never been better resourced? Why are so many of the people who sit across from me in clinic highly intelligent, highly motivated, who have done everything that their GP or doctor has told them and still feel terrible? My guest today has spent 20 years inside that system and has arrived at some of the same conclusions that I have. Not from the outside as a critic, but from inside, as someone who trained as a surgeon, burnt out inside conventional medicine, and then rebuilt his entire clinical philosophy around a different question. Not how do we manage this, but how do we help the body do what it is already designed to do? That shift, I think, is the most important shift in medicine that almost nobody is talking about. Welcome to the Good Health Podcast. I'm Nicole Good, functional medicine practitioner, autoimmune and thyroid specialist, author of Optimal You, and founder of the Good Health Clinic. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Hani Demian, a board-certified pain specialist, healthcare entrepreneur, and founder of Presentia Healthcare, a practice built around redefining how we approach aging, chronic disease, and long-term health. His work sits at the intersection of longevity medicine, regenerative therapies, and truly personalized care, helping patients move beyond symptom management towards addressing the root cause and achieving measurable health optimization. Dr. Demian trained in frontline medicine and surgery, has a Harvard business degree, and has spent the last two decades pushing the boundaries of what medicine can look like when it actually commits to prevention. His current focus is on how emerging technologies, precision diagnostics, genomics, epigenetics, are shaping the future of individualized proactive care. What I found most compelling about him, though, is not the technology, it's the philosophy underneath it. The idea that the next evolution of medicine may look less like more intervention and more like alignment with the body's own intelligence. We get into all of that today, his story, the uncomfortable truths about preventive care, where natural healing and advanced medicine are genuinely converging, and what it actually takes to shift people from outsourcing their health to reclaiming it. This is a conversation that I've been looking forward to, so let's jump straight into it. Okay, so Dr. Hani Demian, it's great to have you on the podcast today. What I really want to kind of start with is your story, because I think it's really fascinating. You trained as trauma surgeon, working those sort of 80-100 hour weeks, maybe more, and then kind of hit burnout yourself. Can you take us back to that moment? What was happening? What did it kind of force you to confront about the way that you'd been practicing medicine? Because I think this is a really hard thing for somebody in medicine to not only to do, but also to kind of admit to.
Nicole, thanks for having me. You reminded me of glorious days, rolling our sleeve and looking like Grey's Anatomy or ER. It was super exciting. Adrenaline rushing through your veins, you're saving lives, you're rolling your sleeves, literally rolling your sleeves and jumping into opening chest, saving patient lives. But after a while, you get burned out. And you get burned out because it becomes a transactional medicine. You're saving their lives, you're great in acute care, but are you really changing the trajectory of the patient life? Are you really saving them after? So they get into accident, they have a heart attack, they had a stroke, you save them, you send them to the next specialist and so forth. But after that, you don't know what happened to the patient, right? You don't know if they're going to come into another accident because they're having heart problems or neurological problems or whatever. So I get to the point that I am fixing the patient, sending them over. It's becoming like a drive-through medicine. Yeah. So it really burned me out. I had that moment in my career that I sat down and thought about it, and I said, I need to do more. I need really to make a difference. They're barely saving them, and they probably end up in ER in the next shift, yeah. Right, for whatever reason. Yeah. So this is where I realized, like, I personally need more. I like people. I'm passionate about what I'm doing. I would like to follow them through their journey. Yeah. And this is what I felt, okay, this is burnout. I think all these thoughts in your head after 8 years of doing it, that's burnout. So I had to shift.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people go into medicine, you go into it because you want to help people. You go into it because you like people, hopefully. Most people do. but it's, I think that being able to see things through and see their story, I think that is, you know, we're fascinated by people's stories as human beings, we are. And I think that's, you know, for somebody who's in medicine, I think that's a really interesting part of the job. And like you said, you know, with the area you were in, you didn't get to see that. So you went from trauma medicine, you went into kind of regenerative medicine, which is an unusual transition, I would, you know, there's not many doctors I know that go from sort of, I mean, that's quite one extreme to the other, you know, in a way. What did you see in the regenerative medicine, or what are you seeing in the regenerative medicine that you didn't find in that conventional surgical or trauma-based sort of practice?
Regenerative medicine and chronic pain medicine, it follows the patient through a great journey, right? Especially chronic pain. You follow the patient when they start developing pain, they get stuck, no answers, they come to our clinic and said, help me out, right? And honestly, I've never seen a patient in pain reject treatment, which is fascinating. You know, other specialties, the patient will tell you, oh, you know what? Let me think about it. Let me see if the insurance is covered or not. With pain, the patient is so vulnerable to the point they said, okay, I am doing that. I trust you. Do it, right? Which is quite fascinating. Regenerative medicine is even actually better. Regenerative medicine is, you know what? We're not going to shift towards surgery. Let's pull back and see what's the root cause of the problem. And patients understand that. And especially younger patients understand that. They don't want a quick fix. They're tired of just treating symptoms and patching and putting Band-Aid on it. And, you know, I mean, tell a 20-year-old, you know what? You're going to come here to the clinic for the rest of your life, taking pills and doing procedures and injection for the rest of your life, and see how they're going to look at you. So let's treat the root cause. And this is where regenerative medicine bridges this gap between traditional, conventional medicine, reactive medicine, to actually proactive medicine. Let's fix the problem. You've got pain. You know what? This problem is a multi-system organ failure. It's not about your arthritis in the knees or degenerative disc disease in the back anymore, or this or that. It's your whole system is not working well from your sleep, your diet, your metabolism, your nutrition, the choices that you make every day make a difference, right? You are an advocate for yourself. If you don't do it yourself, nobody else is going to do it. So they are partners in their health, which is quite amazing. I used to ask patients what medication you're on. I said, this is the list of medication, but why are you taking them? I don't know. They were prescribed to me.
Yeah.
I tell the patient, if I give you a sandwich today, wouldn't you ask me what's in this sandwich? Like, wouldn't you really ask me what's the ingredient? Do you have mayo in it? Do you have mustard, whatever? I said, yeah. I said, how come you don't ask about the medication that the doctor prescribed to you? So this is the whole idea about regenerative medicine. Regenerative medicine, you're getting the patient to be a member, a partner in their health. I'm giving you the root cause. Those habits, those ingredients in your life is making you sick.
Yeah.
Or better off, which we're focusing on preventive, this is will make you sick if you don't change them in the next 10, 20 years. So I need you like you need me. I need you as a patient, as a partner, like you need me as a doctor. And this is really the change between surgical, conventional, traditional, and regenerative and proactive medicine.
Yeah, and that's what I always talk to people about with obviously doing functional medicine, same thing. It's, I think people always say, you know, will this work? And I always say to people, I can give you all the steps you can do, you know, but you have to be an active participant in this. This is not a case. This is not medicine in the sense of I'll give you a pill, go away and take it.
Yeah.
You know, it's a different journey. It's a different thing. And, you know, you have to be a part of that journey. So I think people do have to be committed to it. You've said that most of what gets called preventative care isn't actually preventing anything meaningful. And I think this is really fascinating. I wanted to ask you about it. It's a very provocative kind of claim from, particularly from a medical doctor. What do you mean by that? And what do you think real prevention looks like?
Preventive medicine, in my opinion, and I was against preventive medicine for the longest time. I'm a trauma doctor. Like, how are you going to prevent an accident? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
How are you going to prevent this or that? But honestly, I'm writing a book as well. Preventive medicine or prevention is a pillar for longevity. And it's an important pillar in longevity. Prevention has to be proactive, continuous, and consistent.
Yes.
And has to be individualized. Let's go back a little bit, right? What is preventive medicine that we claim it is prevention now? You're doing mammograms every 5 years to see if you have cancer or not. Okay. You're doing colonoscopy to see if you have cancer or colon or rectum. You're doing a prostate exam. That's not prevention.
Mm.
That's early detection.
Yes.
Right? This is the difference between early detection,
yeah,
right? And once the numbers, I'm doing blood work for the patient every year to check if they have diabetes or not. And then what? Oh, your numbers are good. Let's go home and I'll see you again next year. That's not prevention. I did that to myself, right? I looked at it. I know that all my family members get diabetes. We have a strong diabetes in my family by age of 40. I did not wait. I did not wait till I check my blood sugar one day and it's through the roof. I said, you know what? Let's do real prevention. I started taking metformin 10 years before, and it was the best decision. I haven't developed diabetes so far, but this is prevention, not early detection. So prevention has to be individualized. I need to look at you, look at your health habits, choices, and then we'll do prevention. Otherwise, it's just early detection. We're just waiting until your numbers hit the diagnostic criteria, which, by the way, it's a bell curve. So if you live in Europe, it's different than my numbers in North America. It's different than my numbers in the Middle East, right? Diabetes is different for each one, for each age stage. So that's early detection. Prevention is different.
Well, in functional medicine, we talk a lot about the difference between normal and optimal test results.
Yes.
Because, you know, normal is that bracket of you're fine because you haven't reached diagnostic state yet. We don't want you to get to that point.
That's right.
That in functional medicine, that's too late. You know, we want to reach it before that. We're not looking at normal. What we're looking at is optimal. Actually, are things optimal? And if not, let's keep them there because that prevents you from getting to diagnostic state, which is where we don't want you to end up, hopefully.
Yeah. And this is what I tell the patient. Prevention is not about asking you, do you have the disease or not? This is reactive. And all the tests that we're doing today is focused on this. Prevention is, where are you on the spectrum of this? We know that we're all going to develop chronic condition at one point, but where are you on that spectrum and how and what we can change in your habits, your choices to move the trajectory of this spectrum so you wouldn't develop diabetes or heart condition? If I'm checking your blood pressure or blood work or cholesterol every year, that's just detection.
Yeah.
But what can I do to prevent the cholesterol from depositing in your arteries, becoming a plaque? Did I actually check your pancreatic enzymes? Did I check your insulin resistance and glucose sensitivity way ahead before developing diabetes? It's actually written in the textbooks, but we tend to ignore it as physicians. If I diagnose you as diabetes now, the damage started 10 years before.
Yeah.
10 years. It affects your eyes, kidneys, nerves, right? 10 years before. So the minute I diagnose you with diabetes, you're 10 years behind.
Yeah.
10 years
I
late.
I talk about this a lot because I work with autoimmune disease, and obviously that's usually had processes going on in the body for 10, 15, 20 years prior to reaching that sort of disease state. And I always talk about it with patients as it being a spectrum. Don't think of it of, have I got an autoimmune disease or not? If I've not, I don't need to do anything. It's a spectrum. And if you know you've got autoimmunity in the family, like you're saying with the diabetes, if you know you've got autoimmunity in the family, so is there anything going on? Have you got any autoantibodies showing up that even though you're not symptomatic, you know, is there anything there that we can pick up to work on early? So it's a similar, you know, autoimmunity has that similar sort of pattern with it. So you work with tools like PRP and peptides and sort of cell-based therapies, things like that, that they're designed to kind of stimulate the body's own natural repair mechanisms. And that's kind of, it's an interesting position, I think, that between conventional medicine and what conventional medicine does, and then looking at this kind of the natural healing, incorporating, I guess, the natural healing processes of the body. Where do you see those worlds kind of combining or converging? And what do you think is being overlooked in that kind of area?
We're working currently to enhance the intrinsic healing mechanisms in our body. As I said, as a surgeon, we're doing a great job in treating acute care.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Structural medicine, which patient has cancer, it has to be removed.
Yeah.
There is no two ways about it. You know, the body intrinsic healing mechanism, we're not going to help that. But we haven't actually treated the biology itself. This treating the biology itself for the cells to regenerate and the body to heal, we have to give the body internal boost to enhance its intrinsic healing factors. That could be through different ways, through exosomes, stem cells, PRP, which, whether it's your cells or an external, youthful, healthy cells that comes from the outside, from mesenchymal cells, and help you heal the body, or peptides that go in and heal the mitochondrial function, or as minimal as giving the body the energy or the cells the energy that they need, which is NAD plus and all the supplements that we really recognize now. And we're lucky to live in an environment that has all this, or removing the overload, a lot of dead cells in our body. So we do something called therapeutic plasma exchange. Let's wash your system. If you're having a car and it's not working fine, you're going to go change the oil filter and you're going to change. It's not like okay, you've done something. No, the engine is fine. It just changed the oil filter. If your air conditioner is not working, just change the filter. So this is what we're doing. We're helping the body to work on its intrinsic healing factors, which is amazing. This is the only way to change the biology. We're looking now into cleaning the plaques from the cholesterol deposits through peptides and a lot of other supplements. We're looking into helping patients with prostate problems to change that and slow down the progress of the condition, diabetes. We've got a lot of peptides now that can change the course and the trajectory for people with diabetes, or they will develop diabetes. We're looking into, actually, I was attending a conference in Miami a few weeks ago about people with Alzheimer and how we can detect Alzheimer 10 years before and reverse the trajectory so they wouldn't end up with Alzheimer's. So the science is here, right? We don't have to say that it's one or the other. I think they work together very well, yeah. Right? The conventional medicine is good in diagnostics. We cannot deny that. We have a lot of great diagnostics now. And structural medicine, which we have a cancer, we have to cut it. We have enlarged prostate, we have to deal with it. So I'm not saying that one or the other or they have to oppose, but none is going to work on its own separately. They're both incomplete, in my opinion. They have to work hand in hand.
Have to work together. Yeah. And I think it's fascinating because the body does have everything it needs to repair itself.
It is.
And that's not to say that sometimes we don't need, like, you know, you're saying, like, with trauma and acute care and things like that, that's not to say that we don't sometimes need that sort of intervention. But when we're talking about regenerative and longevity and, you know, these sorts of things, the body has everything in it. Sometimes things are just not, like you said, the filter needs changing. Things are not working quite as well as they should. I think it is, it's kind of merging those two things that I think is really important. I work a lot with I see a lot in autoimmune patients, sort of stress as being a, you know, a root cause of, and not necessarily the whole picture, but part of the picture, one of the root causes. Quite often there will have been a stressful period prior to autoimmunity being triggered or around a flare up or, you know, something like that. The idea that kind of chronic stress, and stress can be lots of things. I would say this as well to people, you know, it can be a psychological stress, but it also can be a physiological stress. So, you know, having an autoimmune disease in itself is a stressor on the body. You know, it's a huge amount of conditions that can impact, from fatigue, autoimmunity. Does that map with what you're seeing in that kind of chronic pain medicine, in that sort of side of things? Are you seeing stress as a root cause of that sort of thing as well? Or in the regenerative medicine?
I've seen this every day, right? And I'm privileged to combine conventional medicine and longevity medicine together, right? It's very important to have the both sides of the picture. Stress is extremely important. And we heard about it a lot. You know what I mean? Don't stress. And our parents and our grandparents says, don't stress, you're going to end up sick. Don't stress, you're going to end up sick. It's actually, we can measure that now. It's called oxidative stress in your cells, which is funny. After that year, she was correct. Don't stress or you're going to get sick.
Yeah.
It is truly correct because stress causes something called oxidative stress. It breaks down our mitochondria and we can measure that in real time. We see that if you're sad or stressed, you're going to affect your cells. The mitochondria will slow down. It will not help restore the function, regenerate, will leak energy. That's why we supplemented with NAD plus, or you've heard about methylene blue that people are taking to reduce the oxidative stress, which is true, but it will end up with a lot of other stuff. We'll end up with a leaky gut because when you stress, you increase secretion of gastric acids and gastric juices, which is strong, actually very strong on the gastric wall, and we'll end up with a leaky gut. This is will end up with increased insulin resistance and increased glucose sensitivity. It's not only this, will it cause inflammation? Oxidative stress is one of the main causes of low chronic inflammation in the system. How low? We don't know. What's low for you, it's high for me. Inflammation will will cause arthritis, will cause heart condition, will cause strokes. So it does affect. So stress will get you sick, yeah. Like my grandmother used to say. Right? Yeah,
I think I get a bit of pushback, I think, from people. And I think that's because they've maybe sort of, they've been to doctors, and this is not all doctors, but, you know, there's some amazing doctors out there. I work with some brilliant doctors. But I think sometimes they've been, and I've had this as the patient as well before I did what I do now. And I was going and they were sort of saying, well, you know, I think you probably, your test results look fine because, you know, they're in that normal range. Your test results look fine. You're probably just a bit stressed. And I mean, I've been told that multiple times by multiple different doctors, or had been way back when, was told that multiple times, multiple different doctors. And I think sometimes when people come to me and I sort of say, we need to look at the stress picture, it's almost like a wall comes up. I think with people, they're sort of like, oh, no, you're not going to just tell me that I'm stressed. This is not just stress. You know, it's like, yeah. it's almost become that. Psychologically itself has almost become a stressor. They are just being told that. And I think we have to reframe that conversation, I think, around stress. And exactly as you've just put it, it's that oxidative stress that we're talking about. We're not just sort of saying you're stressed and that's it. You just, you know, just need to de-stress. Go and, you know, go and relax, go and sit on a beach for a couple of weeks. You know, that's not what we're saying.
It's so important that I, before discovering the cellular medicine a few years back, I looked in it every which way, for myself, for my patients. I went all the way to cortisol levels, 24-hour cortisol levels. I send the patient to the lab twice a day to check their cortisol levels, to check the stress. I send the patient for adrenal insufficiency or adrenal fatigue test, mm-hmm. just to see where are we from all this stress. I did brain scans, couldn't find it. It's just very hard to find it. And sure enough, for doctors that evidence-based, there is no evidence, right, that you're sick. But when you look at it from the cellular medicine, which we can test it now, we can check how much oxidative stress your cells are under, looking at the mitochondria and how it breaks down. And it is natural. By age 30, where all our responsibilities get heavy, we get to the work field, whatever, and we are in the mid of our career or the earliest stage of our career, we get stressed. That's where the mitochondria breaks down. At mid-30s to early 40s, this is the prime time. So if anybody tell you it's in your head or it's stress now, tell them, check it on the stress level, at the cellular level, and how the mitochondria will break down. This is the first stage where the mitochondria break down. So anybody tell you it's in your head, tell them this stress will make you sick.
Yeah.
My grandfather used to say,
yeah,
right? It will make you sick, right? On a cellular level. Yes, it wouldn't show for years,
yeah,
but because human body is resilient.
And I think that's the important bit, is that on the cellular level, I think that's the really important part of that sentence.
And it's measurable now in real time. You look at it, right, under a microscope, and we have tests for that now. You see, okay, the cell is stressed. You don't need to see fire coming out of the engine on the engine light not to know that your car is not working properly, okay? There is a sound that you're not used to. It's not functioning properly. I don't need the engine light. I don't need to see smoke coming from the engine compartment and say, okay, we are on fire now. Mm-hmm. It will show years ahead and give you signals. If you don't pick up on those signals, it's just too bad.
Yeah. You've talked as well, and we've sort of just touched on this, but you've talked about the idea that patients should stop bouncing around specialists. And this, I'm passionate about this because this is what happened to me. I was actually at med school when I became ill. So I was studying neuroscience, ironically, because I have a neurological autoimmune condition. So I was at med school, I was studying neuroscience, and I got passed around. I think I went to 9, 10, 11 different consultants, all of them kind of saying, well, you know, we think you might have this. I had so many wrong diagnoses given to me because nobody was pulling that picture together. And you have talked about this. You've talked about, you know, patients shouldn't be bounced around different specialists. Instead, there should be kind of a team co-managing their care. And this is what we try and do at Good Health. You know, we've got conventional medicine doctors on board. We've got different specialists in different areas to try and bring everything under one roof. But so that you've got somebody that is a port of call that you can, you know, you can speak to and have some, one person looking at everything in that case. And I think there's a deeper sort of question underneath that, which is how do we shift people from, and we touched on this at the very beginning, but how do we shift people from kind of passively outsourcing their health? Because that is how our health system has been built. And that's what yep. most people are familiar with. How do we sort of shift people from that mindset of I'm going to passively outsource this to the doctor to actively reclaiming their part in their healthcare and their role in it and the things that they can do? What's that what's that shift look like, do you think? And how can we make that happen for people?
It's a great question. And I realized that when my son was born, sorry to take you back in this, but I love the stories. It's quite the point of change in my life. So my youngest, he's 8 years old now. He was born and we accidentally discovered that he's got two blocked kidneys, enlarged kidney, enlarged ureter. At age of 7 days, we took him to the hospital in Canada. And we were passed around, like you said, ER doctor to urologist to pediatric urologist to pediatric nephrologist. And then I said, that's it. After 1 week, I said, that's it. We're going to the Mayo Clinic. Went to the Mayo Clinic. Unbelievable healthcare. Yeah. Unbelievable. It's in my mind, this is like the holy grail for medicine. You go in, you have a schedule. We got tested. We get the ultrasound, CAT scans, liver, kidney functions, right? And then we met the urologist, the nephrologist, the nurse practitioner. End of the day, we had a diagnosis. We had a plan, and we were comforted. Ask all the questions to the point that we booked an hour with the specialist. We ran out of questions. We're talking about weather in Canada.
That is so rad.
You know what I mean? Like, how come? You don't even get to do that. Like, as a physician, I've never had that with my patient, that they ran out of question. It's just a couple of questions and we run out of the room. But that was the moment that I realized this should be medicine. This is the way that medicine should be, all under one roof. So what you said is very important. The only way to do that is asking the patient to be a partner in their health and their journey. And we've seen it a lot, right? We've seen it in longevity. We've seen it in regenerative medicine. We've seen the young generation looking into this. When you tell them that meat is bad, they go vegan or vegetarian. When you tell them credit cards are bad, they pay cash. When you tell them driving, you have accident, a lot of them don't drive now. So I think the new generation are more educated, more sophisticated. They have a lot more willpower than we are. It just they need education and they need to be partner in their health journey. This is through education. I have people come to me at the gym, in the streets, in the whatever I get recognized, asking me about peptides. What's peptides? We've seen you on social media talking about peptides. What is it? How can I get? But this is where they become partners. Making patient as a partner is a great thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's a great thing for physicians. We're used to physicians being gods.
Yes, I was going to say I remember going to the hospital with my gran when she was very fit and healthy until sort of she was older. And I remember we went to the hospital and she had to go on a trial sort of treatment. And I went with her and I'd started doing what I do now, and I'd been at medical school, so I was sort of in the frame of mind of, you know, you can ask questions, you know. So the consultant came in and I would be sort of, okay, so why did we do the, why are you doing that? I was asking questions. My gran was like, you can't ask the doctor. Like, you can't, don't question them, you know. And it was
that's
like,
right.
And her mindset was so completely different to mine, was like, you don't upset or question the doctor. And I was like, it's fine to ask them, you know. It's like, and I think, but after she'd seen me do that and she got some answers to things that were actually worrying her but that she wouldn't ask, after that she was then like, every time she went for a doctor's appointment she was like, you're coming with me, aren't you? It's yeah. Like her mindset shifted just from seeing me do it. It sort of stuck with me because it was her, it was that very sort of old school generation of, you know,
right.
They are gods, don't ask them a question.
We're not gods. Like,
you know, everybody's human. If you have a question, exactly. And you're worried
we
about
make
something,
mistakes, and this is from a provider's side. Now I'm going to put my providers, I'm not going to solve your problems in 5 minutes that I meet you. Like, I'm sorry. Like, even if I'm God, you need to explain it to him. You know what I mean? Even an hour, if I give you an hour of my time, right, you're living with your body 24/7. I'm not going to solve it in this. It's just important. It's virtually, physically, mentally impossible. Yeah. I'm telling you that now as a doctor, it's just impossible.
Yeah.
You have to be partner with me.
Yeah.
You're going to come with questions. You're going to come with, I'll give you pain diary. I'll give you a longevity diary. Let's sit down together. That's why we are developing a 24/7 monitoring system through a wearable. I'm that nosy that I want to see your heart rate when you sleep, when you sit, when you're doing your podcast,
yeah.
When you're with your friends, when you're having a drink or whatever. I want to see all this. And I'm going to question you. Monday evening, your heart rate was racing. What was going on? Work. Are you stressed at work? your heart rate variability, your breathing, whatever, your temperature. But this is the way it is. How I'm going to manage you if I'm putting my CEO hat now, how am I going to manage the company if I'm only there once a year?
Yeah.
It's impossible.
So going with that sort of, you know, you've just mentioned, you know, your CEO head, and we all have, when we have businesses, we all have different heads that we have to put on at times. But, you know, you talk a lot about AI as a partner in healthcare. And this is something I'd like to just sort of touch on, because I think I'm seeing more and more people coming to me who are like, well, I've put my symptoms into ChatGPT. You know, it's like people are starting to think about AI as being a part of healthcare. And even if it's in that sort of that's obviously a very basic kind of way. But you've talked about AI as a partner in healthcare, not replacing the doctor, but enabling, you know, more personalized care or predictive care. Where do you think the line is between? Because obviously it's all very new, this, you know, sort of using AI in something like this is sort of still a very new field. But where do you think the line is between technology being genuinely useful and helpful, and then this sort of technology, this AI technology, becoming maybe another layer between the patient and the doctor, or potentially even becoming dangerous? A bit like, you know, it got to the point where Dr. Google was heading down the dangerous road. You know, where do you see that kind of line being with using AI in healthcare?
Like I always say, Nicole, AI will be a great tool to use, will be a very important tool to use, but it will never replace a doctor. Will never replace me seeing you in person, not virtual, in person, looking in your eyes, looking at your health, looking at your habits, looking into all this. And telling you, you know what, Nicole, I don't have an answer for you now, but why don't we wait for 6 months? There's something coming in. AI is not going to do this. AI will say, okay, it's not working. This is under search, under experiment. See you, bye. You will never build this report or connection. AI will be great in analyzing research. I use it a lot when I want to research something. I'm not going to sit for hours and hours reading research. Please summarize this. Summarize. It will be used as a stethoscope. It will be used as my otoscope. It will be used as my tablet. But it will never let AI make decisions for us. This is where it really gets dangerous, right? Yeah. It will never let AI strip out hope, strip out the human connection, me meeting with my patient and telling them, you know what? I think that we don't have an answer for you now, but we will have an answer. Like if I met you when you have your health issues, I will tell you, you know what? I understand you're struggling. I understand there is something wrong, but we can find it. Let's dig deeper into this. Let's take our time. And maybe it's not showing now. It will show tomorrow. AI will never do this. AI will never replace physicians. It will be a great tool to use. I'm just concerned from the other side, the patient will overuse it and it will affect their decision making. So again, it's upon us as provider to let the patient know that it's a great tool, but it will never replace. I am using AI, and we are building our system through having a wearable device like Whoop or Aura that will monitor the patient vitals on a 24/7, and we will have test diagnostics done. AI will help us bridge this gap and said, okay, what is good for you? What habits you're doing during your day, senior habits, senior blood work and diagnostic imaging, what can we do to bridge this? I think you should take supplements. I think you should exercise more, eat better, sleep better, change your sleep pattern, be persistent in exercising and stuff like that. This is what we're looking for AI to help me with. But AI to take on this and start treating you, that's dangerous.
Yeah, that I completely agree. I mean, I think from a physician point of view, there's lots of ways where it can be really, really useful, like you've just talked about. I think for me, the danger is the patient side of it. I mean, this week, I've just had two people sign up to work with me this week, and they're coming into clinic, and they actually found me. I always sort of ask, you know, how did you hear about me? And usually it's, you know, podcast, book, social media, you know, whatever it might be, or, you know, a referral or, you know, what have you. Two of them this week have said, actually, ChatGPT. And that, you know, fine. They've sort of said, this is what's going on. Like, what should I, you know, where can I get help? You know, and it's helped them to find somebody who does the, you know, specializes in what they do. Fine. I think for me, the danger is I have also had people come into clinic where they've said, well, I put this into ChatGPT, so now I'm taking XYZ. And when we look at XYZ, maybe there's something there that actually is interacting with some, you know, in medication that they're taking, or, you know, I think that's where for me it becomes dangerous, is when it's used without that sort of full knowledge of what you need to do, how it needs to be used. But exactly as you said, I think there's some areas where, you know, AI can really help move things to the, you know, to the next level. It is about just being aware and being careful. And in some ways, you know, if a patient is just doing that and putting things into ChatGPT, it's not much different to doctor Googling anything.
Yes,
you know, essentially, it is just pulling information off the internet and telling you, you know, summarizing it. So I think it's important for people to understand that from that perspective.
It does. It becomes so dangerous when they totally rely on it. Remember, I decided to take a course at MIT for 7 weeks about AI in healthcare. And the one thing that I came out with is, it all depends on the data you put in. If you're putting incomplete picture, you're going to get an incomplete answer, period. If you put, like they call it, dirty data in, you're going to get dirty answers in at the end, which is not the way it should be. Doctors are different. We look at it at a different. I can look at you today. I said, you know what? You don't look okay. I've seen you before. You look a little pale. You look a little tired. You look a little exhausted. And that started a total different conversation with the patient. It just needs the doctor to care and to use the tools around it, right? Observe, observe, observe. How are you going to get AI to observe? Yeah. It's just very hard.
And that personalized part can't be replaced.
You can't. You can't. So I had one of my patients, this is a really funny story. So she came and she said, oh, I think I'm going to do this. I said, was it ChatGPT? I said, yeah. I said, okay. Let's do this first and then hold on. She came the next time, said, I put on ChatGPT, is Dr. Damien smarter than ChatGPT? And in fact, she sent it to me. It said, in fact, with his emotional intelligence and background and experience, at some cases he will be, right?
And that's it. It's the emotional intelligence. It's that personal person care that we're talking about. That's the bit that it can't replace. I love that she asked it, though.
Yeah, she was making fun of me, you know what I mean? But she, ChatGPT told her that, okay, yeah, with emotional intelligence, experience, and track record, it will be.
Yeah, I love that. That's a great story. If you know, with this sort of AI, we are sort of starting to look at, you know, the future of medicine, and there's lots of things that, you know, will come in the future. Obviously, it's changing all the time. If you had to sort of describe what you think the next kind of evolution of medicine is going to look like, not maybe just the tools, but like that sort of philosophy around medicine, what would you say? What do you think that's going to be? And what does it mean to you for medicine? Because I know you sort of said work medicine to work with nature rather than against it. What do you think this next sort of phase in medicine is going to look like in the coming years?
And this is not speculation. It's not my having to speculate. It's actually all the signs are directed towards medicine will shift towards proactive medicine, not reactive medicine. We're getting tired of reactive medicine.
Yeah.
Like I said, reactive medicine is you come to the doctor and say, what disease do you have? What's your fear? What's your concerns? We've seen this as a growing fear in the last several years. People are looking not to get sick in the first place. It's a great direction. Great direction. I have a lot of people that obsessed with their heart health and brain health. And that demand shifted to longevity and regenerative medicine. It's all about demand and need. You know what I mean? And doctors have to fulfill this. So we shifted into look into this, look at the cell, and where are you on the spectrum? So we're going to be shifting from what disease do you have to where are you on the spectrum? Where your health is, we can check it. We can check your DNA. We can check your blood work. We can do a lot of diagnostic testing to know where are you there and how we can shift this through changing your habits, choices, environment, sleep, metabolism, all this, and change the trajectory to a healthier, individualized, personalized life for you. Aging will truly be optional, right? And people listen to me. I said, really? I said, yeah, it will be. If you are really keen and you start at age 30, right, or age 20, said, I don't want to age. You do everything right. You eat right, exercise, metabolism. You look at your family history, whatnot, and shift this towards more functional, more healthier choices and healthier environment. You will live longer. I truly believe that the person that will be living to 150 and 200 are walking among us now.
Really?
We will be able to stop, change, prevent aging on a cellular level, prevent it from breaking down, continue being healthy, and patch our mitochondria to go back to and restoring its function and recovery, and we will live. And it doesn't mean that we're going to live young forever, but we're going to optimize our health to the point that at age of 90, at age of 100, I'll still be able to go to the gym. I'll still be able to play with my grandkids. And looking at that, I think within the next 5 to 10 years, people will look different. And you can see that when you look at yourself at age of 20 and 30, you're totally different than your mom, grandmother, and whatnot when they look like. I look at my dad when he was in his 40s and 50s. Today, he will look like he's in his 80s, right? Mm. You look at the older picture, and we are looking at that as what happened? This is what happened. We have better choices, better supplements, better environment, better healthcare. Change it from being reactive to being proactive. And this is the direction. I think the demand will increase. It will not be only for the rich and the famous. Will be for mainstream.
Yeah. I think it is one of those things that it's the future of medicine, but it's also happening already.
It is.
It's here already. Even though it's the future of medicine, it's actually already kind of here.
It's going to be the mainstream, Nicole. It's going to be, this is the case. This is going to be the discussion with your doctor in the next 5 years, right? I feel that I'm not performing at my best. What can I do? Okay, let's look into your cellular oxidative stress. Let's look at your stress levels. You know what I mean? And he will be prescribing to you sleep better and have a better nutrition and whatnot. Try to have this conversation 10 years ago. The doctor will say, you're wasting my time, and he'll probably ban you or fire you and say, go see another doctor.
Yeah, it is that mindset shift that I think is. I already get people coming into clinic who are not sick in the sense of, you know, don't have a diagnosis. But they are, you know, they know that they are getting more stressed or feeling a bit more burnt out, and they want to proactively do something about it. I do love it when somebody comes in at that early stage, because I sort of feel like people are getting that message that actually, like, you shouldn't feel like this. And, you know, it's okay to reach out and try and find something to do and to make yourself feel better and live better. And
it is. And this, as I said, it has to be individualized. We're not going to have the 5 minutes physician visit anymore. It will be a sit down and let's work as a team. I have a naturopath, I have a nutritionist in my team, I have a pain specialist, surgeon, myself for longevity, I have a peptide certified practitioner. We have all to sit down and, okay, those are the tests that we're doing. What can we do for this patient? It will be like this.
A question I've loved this conversation with you today, and we could go on forever. but a question I always ask people to close out these sort of episodes is, what, you know, if somebody's listening to this and, you know, they maybe don't feel 100% or they just want to, you know, make sure that they are optimizing everything, what is the one thing that you would love people listening to take away from this conversation? What's the kind of overriding message that you really want to get out there to them?
If I would say one thing, I said this, and I always say it, is longevity is not about adding years to your life, is adding life to your years. Whatever that means to you, whether it's optimizing, exercising, looking, be a partner in your health, be proactive. I personally don't want to live to 150. I want to live to 90 or 100, but I want to live healthy. I want to go to the gym to the last day and then turn off the light after that. I'm good with it.
Yeah, that's actually literally the first page of my book. It sort of explains all of this. And then it says, what, you know, decision A or B, do you want to live until you are 100? I can't remember what figures I use, but 120, but you're ill from 60, or do you want to live to 80 and you're well until 80? You
know,
which one would you pick? And I'm pretty sure that everybody that has read it will pick option B. They want to be well until the very end. It's not about that. It's not about that length. It's about living well for as long as possible. I've loved this conversation. It's been so great to talk to you. Where can people find you, learn more about the work that you do, get in touch with you? What are the routes?
On my website, we're revamping the website to be able to accommodate a lot of questions, DMs and whatnot. It's Dr. Damian, drdemian.com. Instagram, Dr. Hani Damian. I'm very active on Instagram, LinkedIn and Facebook. DM me, ask questions. I get a lot of questions. I love that challenge. I love talking to people, but keep in mind one thing. I'm very nosy. So I'm going to ask questions. So if you reach out to me, make sure you're ready to answer.
Perfect. We'll link all of those in the show notes below the episode so that people can find you really quickly. Thank you so much for your time today. It's been brilliant to talk to you and have this conversation.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
You've been listening to the Good Health Podcast. I'm Nicole Good, certified functional medicine practitioner, autoimmune and thyroid specialist, and author of Optimal You. You can find me at goodhealth.uk, that's G-O-O-D-E health.uk, on Instagram at Good Health Clinic, G-O-O-D-E Health Clinic, and wherever you get your podcasts. All the resources are linked in the show notes below. I'll see you next week.